Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is Jesse Hall. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Awesome. Coming off an AFC South win, and guess what? Stay in the South. Although this time, I mean, they were technically in Green Bay last game, but now they are actually heading somewhat south to Indianapolis, take on the Colts. And we've got you covered, fully covered here with the Full Press Colts podcast host, as well as the host of the Jay Stevens podcast. It's Mr. Jay Stevens. How are you doing?
Good, good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're good. Yeah, it's going to be a good battle.
I think so. I think it will be.
Potentially on the pod too, but I mean, certainly in the football game, but I know we're happy to have you, Jay, and really excited to get this going. It's funny because I do think somewhat of an identity for both of these teams are the offensive lines. And, you've got, it's funny, especially the left side, there's a lot of symmetry there. You know, vets, well-paid vets, obviously Costanzo may not be as well-paid as Bakhtiari anymore after Sunday's news. But still, excellent left tackles, some of the best in the league. And then you've got two of the best, maybe the two best guards in the game, and they're both still on their rookie contracts, Nelton Jenkins and Quentin Nelson. So interesting to have two great offensive lines going against each other.
It is. It is. The offensive lines, the Colts offensive line's been under, I'll say, scrutiny or has been criticized very heavily this year. But they're starting to turn things around and they're starting to play very well. And that's a battle that on either side, the O-lines for either team is going to be very, very vital in a game like this. Because without them, you're going to find the quarterback on their back a lot. And ultimately will possibly really not help their team at all in helping their chances help their team's chances of winning the game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you kind of look at like the Colts running attack this year, I don't think it really does justice to what that line is. I think that line, we didn't even talk about the centers either. Both teams have two really good centers, but the Colts line, I think I said earlier in Know the Foe, this might be the best line we've seen all year. They're just built to bully people, and that's something that we really haven't responded well to. So it's going to be interesting.
It is the perception of them is entering the season, especially. I mean, this is maybe the best offensive line overall in the league. And while it seems like pass protection has been pretty good. I know I'm looking at Football Outsiders metrics. They have them ranked eighth in actually tied for seventh in adjusted sack rate. And it's not that much of a difference between, fourth and ninth. Packers are at 4.8%. The Colts are at 5.1% in eighth place. So, very minimal difference there as, can all kind of that whole group can kind of make the argument of top five offensive lines, at least pass protection. Colts adjusted line yards, which is really surprising because they've been such as Jesse was saying, a bullying type of offensive line that can really get out there and really hit in the run game. They're at 4.1 adjusted line yards, which is kind of, their independent of running back metric to show offensive line success. That's 23rd in the league. The Lions, Washington, and the Falcons, not offensive lines that you would necessarily say better. They've all have better adjusted line yards than the Colts. So what Jay's saying about the scrutiny, I think, is that definitely more felt, Jay, in the run game where people feel as though that's where the line's underperforming?
Yeah, the line has been underperforming in the running game, occasionally in the past, but primarily in the run. I think it was week number one, Marlon Mack, the starting running back, went down with an Achilles injury. So that derailed the rushing attack and the way that he runs. I won't say it's like Le'Veon Bell, but he's patient like Le'Veon Bell. But no, he's not. Like, when Le'Veon Bell at his best, Marlon Mack is not that good, nowhere close. But when you lose your starting running back week number one, your backup's a rookie. Now, he is Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin, but he is still a rookie without a preseason and abbreviated and altered offseason program. So it's a whole lot different for him to adjust than normal. And that's where a lot of the growing pains have come in. You got a guy that was in college, and Jonathan Taylor was always like the kind of the battering ram, just ran right through. His O-line was better than anybody else in the country. So he was able to get the holes were just always there. And the patience that you need as a running back in this league, Jonathan Taylor did not have a lot. And then you also add in Frank Reich in the offense and them not, what's the right word, utilizing the proper personnel and putting the running backs in the right situations to succeed and be successful. Well, you saw that there. And now if you go back to the Titans game, it seemed like the offensive line was slowly getting back to who they were. Now, granted, they were bullying the Titans, but even if they bully the Titans, you also have to have those running backs, one, be have the plays called properly so the backs can be successful, but also, two, the backs have to be patient. You saw more of that against the Titans, and I do expect to see more of that slowly get back to that running game the Colts saw last year. More running back by committee this year, but I do think what the Colts will get back to the running game from last year and what teams expected them to have this year against the Packers this week and then going forward throughout the rest of the season.
That's good points on that. You know, like you're talking about Taylor with Wisconsin, you know, like, hey, just hit the hole and go. Well, it's a totally different league. You know, NFL, it don't work like that when you got, you know, men on men now. So, yeah, it like you said, I think it's a gel kind of timing, patience kind of thing. No doubt all the talent's there. It's just, you know, getting everything to click. Hopefully it's not this week, but yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, going forward, it looked like last week where I thought they kicked the crap out of Tennessee. You know, started to see these things start to come together for them.
Yeah, you did. You did in a very big way.
And we know with the Packers, I mean, Jesse, we talked about in the Jags recap episode, we thought they actually played pretty well against the run, and they still allowed 100 yards rushing. You know, there was the one breakaway run, but they're a team that's always going to give up short yardage. So you think, especially for Jonathan Taylor, who's kind of been struggling in short yardage situations. I know he did get the one touchdown, I believe it was against the Ravens before fumbling. You know, it would maybe the Packers are a good remedy for that, unfortunately. And I do kind of get the sense, gets close to the goal line, I don't know how the Packers defense is going to hold the Colts out of the end zone. So I think the key is not let them get close, because I think that's where they're going to be the most dangerous.
Well, that and don't rush three people inside the 10-yard line. That's I mean, that's the stats looking what Mike Pettine's been doing. You know, when he's rushing, you know, three and four inside the red zone, it's touchdown, 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 drop, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. You know, it's not a good idea to do. And especially with a team like the Colts that are going to want to, you know, man up, put guys on the line of scrimmage and, you know, hat on a hat and then see what can happen.
Playing with CFL rules, it's minimum four. There's no such thing as not rushing with four. Like, it's just act like you have an extra guy in the field. Even if you don't. And don't actually put an extra guy in the field. Jay, one thing you mentioned about putting players in proper positions. I can't remember which opponent. It was a couple weeks ago. And Nyheim Hines, a couple of receiving touchdowns. And they're using him out of the backfield, kind of, you know, using him out wide, setting him in positions and sometimes against linebackers, but even against defensive backs, seems like he can handle it. And yeah, now last week got more carries on the ground, but I think the expansion of the role of Hines might actually be just as tricky for the Packers as what Taylor offers.
It will. That's been a weird situation this season with Nyheim Hines. You mentioned everybody, you may have heard, he was a 4x1 All-American at NC State, sorry, the school escaped my mind, North Carolina State University, I believe. And he's a speedster. He's a guy that can get in open space and he can go. He's very shifty, quick twitch, has the wiggle that you need in this league to make guys miss at the drop of a hat. But for some reason, it seems like the offense can't get the running backs in the right situations and positions like normal. Sometimes you'll use that, well, they have used Hines as a straight, I'm going to run up the A-gap. Regular old running back, that's like, that's not his style. That's not what he's good at. We have a running back or two that can do that a whole lot better. You get him out in space. You get the ball in his hands either on the swing pass or bubble screen or any type of pass in open space in the flats. Let him utilize his elusiveness in the best way that he can to be special. And you mentioned it, the two touchdown game that he had. I think he had two. It may have been in Detroit because he had. I know he had two backflips after both of the touchdowns that he scored in that game. But that's more of what the Colts should be doing: is getting him out in space, allowing him to utilize his feet, his legs, his hands in the best way that he can to help his offense. Let Jonathan Taylor and Jordan Wilkins be the guys that are your traditional running backs. Let Hines be the scat back or H back, or even put him out there in a slot, which they haven't done very much of. I think they should do more of that, because as a defense, if I see Taylor in the backfield and I see Hines in the slot, I'm not so much worried about Taylor because Taylor's still learning and he's a rookie. But Hines out there in the slot, that provides so many issues. It could cause defensive coordinators to stay up late at night because they don't know how to guard and how to defend this man.
Jesse, would you almost make the argument that Nyheim Hines could be the most dangerous receiving weapon overall for the Colts, not just from a running back perspective, but at all positions?
Yeah, so the Colts are really good. This is not a knock, but really on offense, they don't have, or they haven't used, a field tilter. T.Y. Hilton over, you know, I think injuries and stuff caught up with him. I mean, he hasn't had a 100-yard game and stuff yet. But a guy like Hines, you're 100% right, both of you guys, where what do the Packers not do well? They don't cover running backs. And then you get this smaller guy, kind of how we like to use Irvin. You know, try to get him, or you should try to get him in space, get him the ball, you know, get him in a one-on-one matchup. That's how you beat us. I mean, that's how the Packers, for the last 15 years, suck. Let's be honest. They suck against guys like that, you know. So, yeah, that's the guy that I'm keying on, you know, wherever he's going or try to get him the ball. Like, we need to swarm him, you know. Not, you know, Jonathan, you don't want to get beat by any running back, but that smaller scat kind of guy that can, you know, jitterbug you, that scares me because he can take it from a 5-yard gain to a 50-yard game. And the way we've tackled on a few of those styles, it makes you sick.
Well, and I know that, you know, tight end covering has gotten better this year. That the rookies, sometimes undrafted rookie, and Chris Barnes come in and somehow they figure out how to cover tight ends. It's been a while since. But yeah, you're right. The scat backs, especially those that can be lined up all over the field like that, are definitely a hassle. Good comparison with Irving, because Nyheim Hines and Tyler Irvin both basically possess the same skill sets. Both are great returners. Both are great in space. Pretty good hands. I think Hines is just better. But, you know, between the two, I think Hines is just a better runner overall between the tackles. And, you know, may not be a strong point, but it's certainly, I don't think, a deficiency either. So, yeah, and we see how integral Irvin can be even when he doesn't touch the ball. Just his ability to draw away and draw attention maybe loosens things up for those big runs. Hopefully we don't see some Swiss cheese defense this week. You've referenced this, Jesse, and I think you referenced a bit too in the Know the Foe article. Yeah, no alpha receiver really, or no one who's established himself. But Jay, do you think the rookie Michael Pittman, and you know, since you know, dealing with some injuries earlier in the year, but now he's been healthy and looking pretty good the last couple of weeks, do you think he's starting to ascend to that alpha role?
I would be very, very cautious about saying the alpha role. I think he's more of a receiver that is going to be a true number two. I don't know if I will see him and say he is an alpha or a number one receiver like we're used to seeing. But I do think he is going to be a guy that'll be a 6-7 catch a game guy. Probably about 4 or 5 easy, six or seven on a good day. But he's going to get you those key catches. 3rd and 7, need a catch, throw it to Pittman. 2nd and 15, need a catch to get 3rd and manageable, throw it to Pittman. Those type of catches, those type of options, that's going to be Michael Pittman Jr. You mentioned about the receivers of the Colts and how they really haven't had a true deep threat or a true weapon. T.Y. Hilton has not been himself at all this season. And it wasn't just the injury, the groin injury he had this year. Week number one, all throughout the season when he's been on the field, he has not been himself, and he has struggled to get open. So the Colts have had other receivers step up, some guys that have come off the street you may have never heard of before. One guy named DeMichael Harris, who I had never heard of before. All of a sudden, you get him out in space, in open space, making big plays. But that's kind of how the Colts wide receivers are. Pittman is back, so I do think he'll take more of a bigger role. But I wouldn't say alpha role for him. More of your traditional number two, where he'll just get like I said, 3rd and 8, first down. 2nd and 15, turns into 3rd and manageable. 4th and 5, you need to throw the ball. You're in a spot where you have to make a big catch to move the ball in that way. That could be Pittman, but they have other players, Marcus Johnson, Zach Pascal, even some of the tight ends are utilized very well in the passing game. But in regards to Pittman, I say all that to go back to Pittman and be like, with all these other guys, Pittman's going to be kind of like your security blanket. Let's get the ball to his hands. We need a catch. A guy that has sure hands. Let's move the ball. Let's move the chains. Let's keep this drive rolling.
And that's a good role, you know, where you don't ask him to be number one. That works out great. I mean, you look at all the great, you know, 1-2 punch receiving corps. You have that guy that he does the dirty work. It's not always sexy, but he gets the hard stuff done. Now, you know, going forward, you know, maybe not this year, but next year, the year after, you find that or get T.Y. back to where, you know, how you want to utilize him. You know, that's a really dynamic pair right there.
It is. It is. I don't know if T.Y. Hilton will ever go back to being the receiver that he used to be due to injuries. And I think mentally this is letting. I know when you've been hurt as much as he has and he has been derailed the way that he has in his career and he's not putting up the numbers and he can't really get open. I don't know if he'll go back to being the receiver that he used to be, but he can still play a role on a team, just not in the same way that he used to be. That's just my personal opinion.
I also want to add one other facet. I mean, for most of T.Y. Hilton's career, he played with Andrew Luck. You know, Jacoby Brissett, Philip Rivers. I know Rivers has looked good this year. Neither of them are Andrew Luck. So the downgrading quarterback play might also be a factor. I mean, he led the league in receiving yards. What, that was only 3 years ago or maybe 4 years ago. Like, it wasn't that long ago. And I think, you know, Luck being there. That actually might have even been 2018. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I know it was pretty recently. And if it was 2018, again, that's only 2 years. It's tough to think that his talent would just completely evaporate like that. So, yeah, maybe, you know, quarterback play is important. You don't have to tell Packers fans that. But, yeah, Philip Rivers, what do you think about him this year? Have you been impressed? Or do you think, like myself, that they wasted $25 million and they should have just started Jacoby Brissett?
Oh, no. I'm all on Rivers over Brissett. I'm not a huge Brissett guy at all. I don't think he's a starting quarterback in this league. When I say top 32, he may get a starting job. I don't think he deserves a starting job in this league. I think he's just a backup. He's a guy more of like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, where if you need a guy to play a few games for you, he may have a good game but he won't be a guy that's going to be a sustainable starter in this league. And he showed that last year. I don't know if when it comes to the contract of Rivers, that's one thing where it's like, they did spend a lot of money for that man. Like, is he really worth $25 million? The way he's playing at times, yes. There's other times that he's not. He's not as bad as what people say. If you look at the national or, like, the national landscape, maybe NFL Network or ESPN or FS1, CBS Sports Network, if you look at those networks, they may paint Philip Rivers in a way that may not be actually true. He's not as bad as a lot of people have. A lot of people claim that he is. His throwing motion is very, very weird. It's one that I'm still struggling to get used to. And we're, what, close to play 9 games, about to be game number 10 in a few days. So that just shows, like, his throwing motion is very, very different. You can't get used to it in a week, in a month, or 2 months, 3 months. It takes you a long time to get used to his abnormal throwing style. What's that?
We're still not used to it after 15 years.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it's even different when you're looking at it every single week. Like when the Colts would play the Chargers in the playoffs, okay, cool, we would get it once, maybe twice if the divisions crossed over during that time. But no, it's week after week after week, and it's not, I'm still not used to it. But Rivers isn't played as bad as a lot of people think. He's not going to throw all the touchdowns that you would love for someone to throw. He's not going to be a guy that's going to be throwing for 400 passing yards every single game. He's going to throw interceptions during critical moments in a game. You guys got to learn to live with it. You're not going to like it, but you just got to learn to live with it and keep moving on. But the contract is huge, but he's played better than I thought he would. And it's a testament to not just him, but the receivers. Like I mentioned, there's guys coming up off the street that are playing big roles in a passing game, and it's Rivers being able to get adjusted and acclimated to different receivers that like the ball in different places, that run routes in different rates. They'll run the same route, but their footwork and things will be different. One guy might have a hitch, or they might turn his head at the last minute. You got to learn about all these things with different receivers, and that just shows to the veteran mindset that Rivers has that allows him to be the vet that he is and run this offense and get adjusted to things very, very quickly.
Because, I mean, he's played for so long, 15, 16 years now. He's seen so many different receivers over his career. And before he had a real alpha target hog like Keenan Allen, he was fine. He managed to, you know, to work without having that one player he could rely on snap in, snap out. And so it seems like he's been able to adjust really well. I know Jesse, again, back to the Know the Foe article, such a great read this week. You talked about it. The biggest thing Rivers brings, and you know, correct us if we're wrong here, Jay, is not even the throwing or the arm or the accuracy or any of that. It's the football IQ. He's seen every defensive that you can probably think of, and it's very Peyton Manning the end of his career, right? I mean, he led the Broncos to success in the playoffs at the end, not because of his ability to throw the football at that point, but even just to know simple things like what direction to run in. Oh, you know, they're coming off the right edge. We should probably run to the left now, or just reverse it. Like little things like that are sometimes what a quarterback like Rivers can bring to an offense.
You're right. You're exactly right. And I think with this team, with the pieces that the Colts have put together, with the defense that has been put together, put in a way that is lethal, the Colts needed a veteran quarterback. You saw early on last year, Brissett was not going to be the guy. If you want to make a deep playoff run, at least from the way I saw it, I didn't believe Brissett could do that. I don't know if Brissett can even get you to the playoffs. I just don't think he's that kind of quarterback. With Jacob Eason, it was too early. So you got to figure out what vet can we get to bring him in to help him be a bridge quarterback. Maybe we're going to get 1 year. We might get two. Who can we get? Rivers is that guy. And then also, like, a lot of people around the league listening to this may not know about this, but there was a lot of push from Colts fans to put Chad Kelly, the former Ole Miss quarterback, at the starting role, who was barely able to stay on the practice squad simply because Jim Kelly and Frank Reich had history, and Frank Reich was like, "Hey, I'll keep Chad on the roster for a little bit longer." Like that's kind of how it was. Like Chad Kelly does not, from everything I've read from people that are there at practice, Chad Kelly does not deserve to be in the NFL. He's not an NFL caliber quarterback. Maybe practice squad, but even third string, he's not that guy. And it's not bad. It's not a knock on any individual person to say you're not good to be enough. You're not good enough to be in the NFL. It's very, very hard to be in the National Football League. And we're seeing that the Colts have had quarterback issues. It's amazing that Rivers came from L.A. to Indianapolis to be the quarterback of the Colts. And you see his love for the game and how much he enjoys being around his team every week, every time he's on the field with them.
Yeah, and I don't care if Rivers is 78 and he's playing for North Dakota State. He has been a Packer killer. When was the last time we beat the Chargers when he played there? I can't think of it. He embarrassed us every time we played him. We lost last year going out there to a bad Chargers team. And then the time before that, you know, he just dismantled us. I think he threw for like 470 yards or some crap like that. So until we beat him, I don't care if he's in a wheelchair. He scares me. So we got to do it right. We got to figure out how to slow him down.
And again, equipped with maybe the best, at least again, pass protection offensive line he's ever had. So
by far.
But yeah, so keen on the injuries. Quickly, Jay, are there any major injuries that the Colts are dealing with right now? Anyone that's unsure to play on Sunday?
As I look at the injury report right now, there are a couple names on there that did not practice on Wednesday. Some are light participants. Julian Blackman was a light participant who is a starting strong, I think, believe it's strong safety. Very, very key and huge as a rookie. With Malik Hooker going down, he has stepped in a huge way, bigger than anybody had ever thought. The one thing interesting is Trey Burton, a tight end, did not participate in practice Wednesday, but it was due to rest. Jack Doyle did not participate with a concussion. That's when I don't know if he'll play, because of the concussion that he recently suffered. And then also Mo Alie-Cox with a knee injury, who he has had knee issues recently or over a few games. And I don't – yet when you have all three of your tight ends on the injury report right now and it's Wednesday. Now, yes, Thursday things could change. Friday things could change. I do assume that Trey Burton and Mo Alie-Cox will both play on Sunday. Jack Doyle is the one that I don't know because of the concussion. I don't know if he'll be outside of concussion protocol to be able to play. But everyone knows this name, Justin Houston. If you look at the injury report, you'll be like, oh, Justin Houston, he's on there. Great. That's amazing. It's just rest. Like, I would not read into that way too much. Even for Trey Burton, like, these guys are a little bit older. Their body needs the rest. Like, I would not read into anything too much when it comes to Trey Burton or Justin Houston. Now, things can change for between now and then, to where they aren't playing, but I do expect both of them to play on Sunday.
So you mentioned, Jack Doyle's the one that's probably the biggest risk with the concussion.
Yeah, easily.
And it's, the Packers, maybe similar thing. Jaire Alexander, star corner. And I mean, star even feels like it's underselling him. But all-star, there you go. So concussion, missed last week. Not sure if he's going to play. Matt LaFleur mentioned today at a press conference that he's still in the concussion protocol. It does list him as limited, but I mean, he's still going to have to clear some stages. So, and I don't know, not to, again, because it's Rivers, and again, as Jesse mentioned, the Packer killer. But with these receiving weapons, this might be the one week where you don't mind necessarily missing Alexander, especially if Kevin King comes back. Because I think, so Jesse, I don't know how do you necessarily approach it, but it, you know, if we kind of go with the understanding that Nyheim Hines is one of the biggest threats, especially, you know, from the slot, for instance, having a guy like Channon Sullivan almost shadow him throughout the game might be the way, or Raven Green actually might be, you know, just kind of a floater spy on not the quarterback, but on the running back, you know, not the, it's good. 'Cause the Packers really have a hard time with running quarterbacks. So we don't have to worry about that this game. And then, you know, Kevin King takes out whoever, you know, Pittman or whoever they feel is the biggest threat, assuming he's back a full participant. And this is again, the Wednesday, report. So good to see. It seemed like he was going to be fine to play last week. There's a lot of limited full practices towards the end of the week. Nice to see a full practice right from the start, but still a little hesitant there if we're going to see him. It's been over a month now. But so what do you think about that plan? With like Sullivan or Green on almost every play taking out Nyheim Hines or trying to take out Nyheim Hines.
Who's Kevin King, by the way? I never heard of him because we've been talking about that now 3 weeks, like, okay, he's getting close. And it's like, come on, man, we need you. So, like, this is the week where if we need the guys to go, I'm going to say right now, this is the toughest game on our remaining schedule right now. So after a lackluster game last week, this one matters. So I would treat it like a playoff game where if, like, a guy like King can go, you have to go. You have to play this week because we need you, because, like what you're saying with Hines, he's going to need – that guy to kind of shadow him, you know, and I think Sullivan's perfect for that role. You know, he's quick. He plays the slot already. So that's the guy you want to put on a player like that. 'Cause heaven forbid, it's not going to be Josh Jackson or, you know, Raven Green. I think Raven Green's a player you want to move around. Like, that's your chess piece that, you know, he can blitz, he can play in the box, he can go out and he can cover in the slot if he needs to. You know, you don't want to give him that assignment where he's just going to shadow their biggest threat, because that takes away his ability to be a threat for us too. You know, where a guy like Channon Sullivan, like, let them neutralize each other. You know, if we don't hear Channon Sullivan's name all day, guess what? He did pretty damn good. So yeah, I agree with that. That would be the guy that I would have fall around. You know, I think we're kind of agreeing, you know, Hines is the biggest threat. So that's where I would put Channon. Or, you know, if Alexander's back, that'd be a great role for him. You know, we've been a few weeks where other guys played on the boundary. Hey, Jair can play in the slot. He can play anywhere. He's been lights out this year. Neutralize their biggest threat. So it'll be interesting to see what we do.
True, because if Josh Jackson's on the perimeter covering 2020 version of T.Y. Hilton, or even a rookie in Michael Pittman, who has been playing well but still a rookie, you feel better about that. Whereas you wouldn't have felt great about him covering like DJ Chark last week. Although I feel like that had to happen a couple times, because there were a couple times when like Cole was covered by Sullivan and things like that. So, but I guess it didn't. Did Josh Jackson allow a reception last week?
No, actually, PFF loved him last week. Like, they raved about how good he played. So, Hey, you know, maybe we're harder here on him, you know, just watching the games. But yeah, he actually. Well, now let's, you know, the Jaguars threw for what, 160 yards? So it wasn't like they passed us to death. We just, let's not even go back to that game. But he played really well.
Which is funny coming off, again, you know, you and I both think it may be his worst career game against the 49ers, and allowing Richie James to be the best receiver in week nine. So that was that wasn't so desirable. But I feel a bit better about him going into this week.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you think about our plan there, Jay? You know, Sullivan on Hines and you know, hope to get the matchup of Kevin King on Pittman and neutralize it that way. Do you think that's how the Packers secondary should attack the Colts?
I think so. And I think the bigger thing with the Colts offense is the offense calling the right plays. Because that seems to be the biggest thing that hurts the Colts is Frank Reich or the whoever the play caller may happen to be during the game, not utilizing the calling the proper plays and putting the right players in the game. Not so much the plays, putting the right players in the game at the right time in their proper position. Like, it seems elementary, but when they're not there, like I said, Hines sometimes is, like, if you're a traditional running back, A-gap, B-gap style runs, that's not his game. Like, it's not very hard to see. He's a speedster, H-back or slot. Put him out there in space and let him go out there and do what he does best. And I think, honestly, it's if the Colts put players in the proper positions, the offense clicks. Because Phillip Rivers has started running a no-huddle offense, and no matter who is or whoever was on the opposition, the Ravens, they had personnel issues and play calling and putting players in a proper position. And Ravens defense is amazing, so if you have those issues, the Ravens will ultimately probably find a way to slow down your attack and become victorious at the end of the game, which is what they did. So I do think, honestly, it's more the Colts offense just doing their thing instead of whatever schematically the opposition does to slow them down.
Yeah, I agree. Kind of what you're saying, you know, like, you might not be the big play offense, but you can pick apart teams and it seems like you shoot yourselves in the foot where it's like, okay,
right, you know,
we're moving the ball, we're playing good, and then all of a sudden, bam, you just drive kind of like the Packers do. Hey, you know, everything's working. All of a sudden, why did we change? And then all of a sudden we're clunking and it's not clicking. It's like, oh man, if you just not saying I'm smarter than these coaches, but it's like, you can kind of see why are we doing this still, you know? So
right.
I see where you're coming from there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. It's really weird the way that the season has unfolded, not just for the Colts, but a lot of other teams. It's details that when you watch the game, you see them over and over and over. You can watch clips on YouTube where it's like a 15, 20-minute clip of highlights of the game. But if you're not getting the feel of the game, like you mentioned PFF, like they do great at grading, but we watch the games. They can't watch every second of every game every single week. So they're going off a mass of information to put into a formula to spit out a number, which is how, like, what we say may be different than what their number may say or what the national analyst may say, because they have so much going on. People feed them stuff. You and I, we watch the games, watch the teams we cover every single week.
True statement right there, 100%.
And just to go back a little bit, to play devil's advocate, I mean, you were mentioning the why run Hines up the A or B gap. Sometimes, and I know this is kind of like a Bill Belichick thing, it's to kind of mess with the analytics a little bit to break tendencies, right? Like, no one will ever expect Hines to be run up the middle, so the defense may not be expecting it. You catch them off guard and maybe get success there, or at the very least, it kind of looks at the percentages. And, oh, okay, sometimes they play him, they run up the middle, so we have to be ready for that. Maybe opens things to the outside, so I can kind of get the logic behind that, but you also don't want to necessarily do something if it's not going to work too often.
No, I'm there with you. I understand the analytics side, and Frank Reich is sometimes going with his gut and being very sometimes he is against the grain. He does things that aren't the norm. Sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't. I don't know if it was last week against the Titans or if it was the week before against the Ravens. But I know it was one of those two games. He went 4th and 4th down 5 times. Now, the numbers, the analytics, like all that stuff goes into it. Sometimes it works in your favor to be to go against the grain or even to go against the analytics based off the situation. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I'm sitting at home and there may be people sitting there in the press box that are saying, don't do that. That makes no sense. Like, take the points, kick the field goal, or punt the ball. But Frank Reich does what he wants to do. And he honestly, one thing I enjoy about him, even though I don't agree with every decision that he makes, he lives and he backs up every decision that he makes, from Adam Vinatieri last year to Phillip Rivers this year, and sometimes being the motivator that Rivers needed at the time. Frank Reich backs up every single decision that he makes, and I think that shows in the way that he calls the game. You may say 4th and 2, you're in the red zone, kick the field goal, it's 3 points, you're walking away with something. Frank Reich wants to go for it. Now, if he doesn't get it, okay, great. He doesn't get it, but he rides and he lives with every decision that he makes, and you have to respect somebody that lives their life like that.
No excuses, right? Like, I'm making that decision. I'm going to live by it. Okay, it was the wrong one, but you learn from it.
Right.
Yeah, and to go even further with that, I mean, I respect him as when you look at this football team, they're disciplined, they're assignment sure. So when he does take risks, he knows that, okay, if I mess up, it's not going to the whole kingdom's not coming down. He knows if he's going to take that shot, he can trust the other side of the ball to, okay, we didn't get those points. We went for it on fourth down. We put you in a situation. Guess what? This defense is top three in every category on defense. You can play like that. You can be aggressive on offense and take shots and then trust your guys to get you that football back. So that's a good problem to have. And like you said, he backs it up. I think his players respect that. And that's a good whole nucleus as a team that there's no locker room BS and people calling out coaches and worried about crap. It works. So good for him.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Really good for him.
And you got to think, I mean, we'll harken back to when it was everyone was expecting Josh McDaniels to get it. And there's the staff in place. And you know, Frank Wright was the second choice. He didn't complain. He didn't come in here and didn't seem like he whined about it. Okay, he got the opportunity. Team in place. It didn't matter. It wasn't his defensive coordinator. And that I believe that defensive coordinator is still with the team right now, right?
I believe so. I believe he is.
So, I mean, that sounds like someone that's... If I'm not in control of every situation, and it's not a big deal. Work with what we have. We got to do the best we can. That's why I've been hired as a coach, and trust in his ability and his ability to, as you mentioned, teach his staff, his players, and yeah, Jesse, you said it. Disciplined football team. Now, a bit of parallels here, and I know Jesse, you're not always the happiest with play calling, but do you like Matt LaFleur's aggressiveness as well? Like Frank Wright going for it often on fourth downs. I've been watching games where they've been going for it, and I love it. Don't punt. As much as I love J.K. Scott, give Aaron Rodgers the football. Let him try and make that play. And if it's a turnover, it's a turnover. But, I think, you know, fortune favors the bold. So I do think the teams that go for it on fourth down, it does A, show the coach trusts the players on both sides of the football, and B, seems analytically is the smarter decision to do more often than not. Now, so quickly run back over the injury report. We started on that. So there were only, aside from, again, Jair Alexander limited in concussion protocol. It's weird to know what that means. Mostly work on the side, not really part of the practice itself. But three did not participate. Montrevis Adams with a toe injury. Tyler Irvin saying wrist and ribs. He left last game with the injury. Missed most of the game, actually. And then also Equanimeous St. Brown with a knee injury. I would say I think Irvin's the likeliest to miss just because we've already seen him miss time. This is an injury that forced him to leave a game, and didn't seem good then. Like it seemed like that would be a multi-week thing. So I would anticipate that. Sam, do you know anything about Adams or Brown? Heard anything in specifics about them?
Well, Sam's not here, but I'll go with that.
Wow. Sorry. It's okay. I'm the one with the migraine.
I like Sam.
Yeah.
No, it's all good. Don't worry about it.
I'm maybe hoping that he felt better and just randomly joined the call with that info. Yeah, Jesse.
I was going to say, when did you sneak him in here?
Yeah. Thinking about you, Sam. Clearly. But Jesse, when do you hear anything about Adams or St. Brown? Has there been any details about how they can track those injuries, how serious?
Yeah, so I don't know a lot on, you know, they didn't practice today. Not much was said. It was kind of tight-lipped. I don't think we're going to see Irvin, unfortunately. He went out in the first quarter last week, and it's re-injuring. Something's always bad. So that's not good. And plus ribs, not good. I'm still kind of worried about Devontae. Yeah, I know he practiced today, but I was listening to Rodgers talk, and he still sounded a little concerned about him. So when Rodgers is saying, you know, hey, you know, Adams, hopefully he's full speed next week, because obviously he wasn't in the second half of that game. He was limping around and didn't look the best. So that kind of bothers me. But then again, you know, with St. Brown going down, hopefully Lazard's going to get to go. I know we had to activate him. If we didn't activate him, we had to activate him this week. But it sounds like he's been practicing and he's going. So that's a huge piece to add. Yeah, that's everything else has been kind of tight-lipped. AJ Dillon should be back in the fold, even though he's third string running back and everything. But with Irvin not being there, maybe they could. We've put three running backs on the field before and done motion and all that stuff. So hopefully we do a few different wrinkles and be not vanilla like last week, but we're not going to get into the play calling last week. But, but other than that, it's been quiet.
Well, and we're not going to be quiet here. I do want to get into the, you know, play calling and game planning this week, because honestly, I was looking at this matchup, and Jesse, you've already referenced, I don't know where the weak spot is on the Colts defense. I don't know that there is a weak spot on the Colts defense. So, you know, maybe some internal scouting. Jay, looking at the Packers roster and offense, knowing how that they like to approach, what do you think their game plan should be? How would you, what are you most fearing from the Packers offense?
It's going to sound very simple, but it's going to be tough. Be as well balanced as they can be, because you've mentioned it. I wasn't going to harp on it unless you asked me to. The Colts defense is good. Very, very good. Right up there with the Steelers as being one of the best defenses in the NFL. And if you're going up against a team like that, you can't be one-dimensional. As good as Aaron Rodgers is, as good as he received, as good as the running back, I think it's Aaron Jones. Wow, my mind just went blank. Devontae Adams, as good as they are as individuals, you can't focus on one person or another the entire time. You literally have to be very, very comfortable being as well balanced as possible. Keep your run attack as often as your pass attack, so the defense cannot make you one-dimensional. Because once the defense makes you one-dimensional, game's over. Like, it's over. Now, the one way that they can actually, the defense actually gets hurt, which is why the Colts do have three losses this year. Sometimes the Colts offense cannot sustain drives, and the defense is on the field for a majority of the game, especially in the second half of games, and that's really been the Achilles heel of the Colts defense. But going up against the Colts defense, you have to be as well-rounded as possible. You can't just be a stick. You can't just sit back in the pocket, or you can't just be rolling out the entire time. You have to really mix it up and just try to hit them at every which way you can. Death by 1,000 paper cuts. Now, it may be a million. That's how good this defense is. But you may have to be as well-balanced and run the ball as much as you pass the ball. And in a passing game, don't focus on one player. Throw the ball around the yard and get everybody involved.
Because Adams likely ends up matched with Xavier Rhodes most of the afternoon. Yeah, I guess afternoon. It could go to evening, depending on where you live. But, you know, I do like that matchup in the sense that I feel like it's just tough matchups across the board. Like, it's going to be tough coverage there, you know, against him. I think Lazard coming back, this is a tough welcome back game. Really tough defense. This isn't the Lions, after all. So, I mean, I still expect, if he's playing and relatively healthy enough, I assume Adams gets the most targets. And I guess the real question there is, who's number two? Is it a running back? Is it Lazard? Is it Tonyan? Anyone want to take a guess? Anyone have any ideas of who we think is going to be that number two guy that Rodgers looks to when Adams isn't available, gets double teamed, or Rhodes is able to cover him really well?
I just think it's Aaron Jones, and it's all about, like we were talking about with Hines, working in space. This Colts defense, I know what you're saying about being balanced, and you cannot abandon the running game, but you can't run into the teeth of this defense on first down every time. Right. Expect to win. You know, we got to try to loosen that up and spread them out, because as good as Xavier Rhodes is this year from where he was last year, we know who he is, obviously, because he was in our division, you know, for so many years. And Adams does pretty well with them, so I like that matchup. But, you know, to spread out these good linebackers, we got to loosen this defense up. So get Jones out in space. You know, even if we don't be able to run all this motion stuff that we're doing, we got to somehow, like, spread this team out a little bit. Because if we're going to just play in the box in front seven, it's going to be like last week. There's no running room. It's going to lock it down. I know you mentioned him earlier with Julian Blackman. I will give a lot of respect to that young man, because as a third round pick coming in, he has been really dang good. I just was watching some cut ups on him. This kid's a good football player. What a find right there. But with that too, I think we can use some double moves. If we can get the protection, use some double moves and maybe get just space out this defense and hopefully try just to loosen them up. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, we have to use the whole field against this team, because if we're just going to play head on head in the box, it's going to be shortcomings.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Shortcomings is exactly right.
I wonder, you know, you mentioned, Jesse, not running the teeth on first down. You know, run on second down when it's less expected. You know, try and use the pass game to set up better run situations on second and third down, and beat them that way might almost be the best way to do it. And it, just always keep that defense guessing. If you run every single first and 10, that's probably not going to work.
Well, definitely. Like last week, we kind of saw that where, okay, you know, first down, we do a quick out to the outside and pick up 6 yards. Well, now you're sitting on a really good down and distance where we can do anything. You can, but then we didn't do any play action. We didn't do any rolling out. Or we did like once or twice and it worked. And then we quit doing it. And I'm like banging my head into my wall being like, why are we not doing more of this? You know, so like I said, just do some small things to the outside. Try to get in a good second down situation where you can run the ball maybe, or at least keep them on their toes. Because like Jay was saying, if they know we're passing, or if it's second and long and we're going to pass the football, we're screwed, you know, because they know what's coming.
All right, so maybe, you know, last specific question. Hey, look at that. For more than 45 minutes in and I haven't mentioned fantasy yet. You're welcome, fans. That changes now, though. So I've got this decision in a couple leagues, and I've been kind of wondering how to approach it. So I'm going to maybe greedily presume that other people might be thinking about the same situation. Just because the Colts are such a tough defense, I don't want to play both these players, but between Allen Lazard and Robert Tonyan, who do you think both of you would think will be the more productive player? I've got two leagues where I've got both of them, and just trying to, I mean, I might just split the difference one in one league, one in the other, but do you think there's a clear, better favorite to produce better between the two?
Oh my gosh, I'm not the fantasy guy. I'm definitely not that. I'll go Allen Lazard. Just because that's where the first thought in my head, but I'm definitely not the guy to go for fantasy advice. I'm good in some leagues, I'm in bad, so take that for what it's worth. I would not take what I said to the bank and cash it and then come back and be like, oh, Jay said this and it didn't work out, I'm going to go back for Jay. I would not go that far.
Yeah, I'm going to go the same way. First of all, yeah, if you look at my fantasy teams this year, you don't want to hear anything I got to say. So maybe I should go with Large Robert, but no, I would say Lazard just because the Colts are going to try to stop Adams first, right? You know, take away the best, you know, do what Belichick's always done, get beat by guys other than your best, right? So that's what you want to do. So I think Lazard's good enough where if he does play, I hope he does, knock on wood, you know, he'd be the guy that I think is going to get more targets. And, you know, with Tonyan lately, we just haven't gotten him going. So I just feel like Lazard's going to be your best bet there.
It's funny. My instinct in both leagues was, okay, just play Lazard, thinking that, you know, there have been games, like, even in Tonyan's best games, he hasn't been getting, like, 10 targets. It's, oh, he's gotten 6 targets and he's scored on half of them. So, you know, major week against the Falcons there. But Lazard's the type where he could see, you know, big target share even when Adams plays. We saw it last year against the Lions. They both had, I can't remember, I think like they combined for about close to 20 targets and then no one else had more than 2. It was just everything was focused towards them, and it was one of those where the Packers didn't run too many plays. The Lions controlled the whole game. That wasn't fun. but I do get the sense that, yeah, if Lazard's healthy, especially if Adams isn't 100%, I think that really kind of skews that to he's going to be the guy that Rodgers looks to more often. I also know from a fantasy perspective, tight end matchup seems like it's much more important than wide receiver matchup to a certain extent, because with what it's more the individual corner matchup. Whereas if a team is really good at defending a tight end, then that usually will stick. And then vice versa, if a team is really bad at covering a tight end, we saw Arizona all last year. The Falcons are bad at covering everybody, but especially includes tight ends. I guess the Saints are a good example of a good defense that's been allowing a lot of production to tight ends. But the Colts, depending on the league setting, they're bottom of the league. One of my leagues I was looking at, 32nd in points allowed to tight ends. So I get the sense this is not a great week for Robert Tonyan. And so, yeah, my instinct was to go with Lazard. So thank you both for confirming. I am the Full Press Coverage fantasy managing editor, so I have to tell people to listen to my fantasy advice. So if you're both in line with me, maybe it's a good sign for both of you then.
Well, I wouldn't say that's good, but just run with it.
Exactly.
Hopefully like Lazard does, it runs for lots of yards. Were there any, I think we covered everybody. Do either of you have any final thoughts about this game?
Final thoughts about the game. I think it'll be It could be it's one of those games where it could be one-sided either way. You don't know what to expect really from the Colts offense, play calling wise, things like that. It could be one of the most competitive games of the year. It's just one of those games where, on my side, covering the Colts, I've been very uneasy as far as what the game plan is going to be, what we're going to see, what plays they're going to call. But when things go well, everything goes well. I would just tell fans, sit back, relax. It's later in the day. You get Joe Buck on the call. You may like him. You may not like him. But for some reason, whenever he's on the call of a game, a lot of people watch. So I would just encourage everybody, watch the game. Enjoy it. It'll be a fun game to watch. Two good quarterbacks, two good teams. And this is what we love to watch as sports fans, is two good teams compete in their sport.
Yeah, I agree. Just looking at what the Colts, you know, after what they've done to Tennessee last week, I don't think this is more of a – it's obviously it's not a must-win with either, but I think this is a statement game with the Packers. The last 3 weeks they have been under – well, the Niner game, okay, we win, but then no one's going to – it doesn't matter because they were so beat up. But the way we played at home against the Vikings and the way we looked like crap last week – now we're going on the road again, and, you know, LaFleur kind of said, you know, it starts at the top, and the play calling's got to be better, and we got to play better. Rodgers was saying we're finally getting healthy. Well, you know, it's time to put it back together. You know, if we expect to be right now sitting at the number one seed, knock on wood, this is a game that these are teams that you got to match up well against. Now, if it's a close loss, so be it, but we have to show we belong, and this is a damn good football team that – that's where you want to stack up against, right? This is a team that you want to see, okay, playoff teams going in their house with, actually, hey, guess what, a few fans, which the Packers seem like they want to hear, even if it's booze. You know, it's going to sound like a real football game. It's going to have a playoff feel of two contending teams. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I can't wait.
I mean, two current division leaders, right? And so that's that's always really compelling. Just saying that. I mean, unless it's the NFC division leader, but NFC East division leader. But we'll leave that aside. Jesse, I would expand the point further. The last 6 weeks, they've had one really good game. It was against the Texans. I mean, so week five they had the bye. They had the dredging that was the Buccaneers game. You get the Texans, great bounce back. But since then, it's been the win against the I'll use my co-host on the Full Press Fantasy Pods joke. It was the San Francisco 29ers there, because it was half their team.
That's right.
But then two losses in that stretch, right? So it really has just been a while. I mean, those first four games, everything looked great, other than, you know, not tackling Alvin Kamara, but they still got the win, so it didn't matter. But it's kind of been a bit of a far cry, hoping that this is just a lull. And that the first four wasn't a fluke, and that we, you know, kind of need to get back to that. And this, you know, you might be right, Jesse. This might be the most difficult game they face the rest of the way.
Yeah, I do. And it's just the time of year, you know, we're getting into mid-November. You got to start stacking successes, and you got to start going forward, and you got to beat good teams. You know, I don't know. I feel like a playoff atmosphere. Hopefully the guys come out and perform. Because like you said, we start off so fast and then kind of took a dip and, you know, injuries here, injuries there. Well, you know, you can't pull that excuse. Everybody's hurt. So it's time to go. So there's not going to be a blowout, I'll tell you that. We're not favored. But hopefully it's going to be a hard-fought game against a good, solid football team. So you beat Indy and Indy, you deserve that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can't agree more.
And I'm sure all our listeners agree that you were great, Jay. Really great having you on. Why don't you let them know where they can find and follow you?
Oh, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you having me on. You can follow me on Twitter at jstevens07, and that is Stevens well spelled with a PH. You can also listen to the Full Press Colts podcast on the Full Press Coverage app or fullpresscoverage.com or Apple or Spotify. Go ahead and search Full Press Colts. You'll find it. Do shows three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, keeping you up to date with what's going on with the Colts, and love every second of it.
He mentioned the Full Press Coverage app. That's great. You can download it for free on the Full Press, on the app stores. Get access to all the written content. Jesse's Know the Foe article, for instance, which is always a great read every week. Really lets you, the fans, know about these opponents, which again, know the foe. It's in the title. So you do the job, Jesse, as you always do here as well. And again, if you want to follow Jesse, it's at Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. Download the full press coverage app for free. Jesse, any final thoughts?
Like every week, go Pack, go.
Absolutely. Again, thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Jay. Really appreciate having you here on the Full Press Packers Pod.